On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Can the Clippers prove age really is just a number? And what's the ceiling for this aging roster heading into next season? Plus, with Marcus Smart heading to LA, which new offseason addition are we most excited about? All this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Tom Haberstroh. Welcome to The Big Number. That's my man, Dan Devine over there. Dan, what's going on, man?
I'm feeling good. I'm dancing. I don't know if anybody can see this on YouTube. I hope you can, because I'm dancing as hard as I possibly can right now. It is July 23rd. It's afternoon Eastern time. If any major things have happened, and you know, late July, middle of the day, this is when it goes down, Tom.
Yeah. We're going to have to react. You feeling young? You feeling young, Dan?
Dude, I'm feeling older than I've ever felt, which is literally true, but that's all right. I was talking to a dad at camp drop-off today who was like, this guy's carved out of marble and gorgeous and European. So I'm like, this sucks. Right away, this sucks. This is hard. And he's like, yeah, no, I like get my workout done like 6:15 every morning so I can do business calls with my guys in London and really get a jump on the day. And I was like, I've never felt less young, cool, and attractive than hearing you talk about being at the gym at 6:15 doing business with London as I'm like rolling over to make peanut butter and jellies. It's totally, anyway, Tom Haberstroh, we're in off-season mode, but we're not all the way in off-season mode because there's still some stuff to talk about. I'm ready to put up some numbers with you. What is our big number this week, Tom?
Well, Dan, the reason why I'm asking if you're feeling young, you're feeling fresh today is because this week's big number is 33.2. That's the average age, 33 years old, of the Los Angeles Clippers roster if the players log as many minutes as they did last season, okay? Wow. So that's really old, okay? That is literally the oldest team in NBA history.
Wow.
If this happens as it did last year, right? So I looked this up. The oldest team on record, according to Basketball Reference age tracking, is the 2000-2001 Utah Jazz with John Stockton, Brian Russell, Karl Malone.
Sure. Makes sense.
That team had an average age of 32. This Clippers team is at 33.2, Dan. So like, way beyond what we've seen from any of the oldest teams, all the gray beards, all the old heads of yore. This Clippers team is older than any of those. So like, I hear some other teams that if you want to know who are the oldest teams ever, that 2001 Utah Jazz team that got ousted in the first round. Then you got the 98 Houston Rockets, 32.0. So like barely 32 years old average age. And exited in the first round that year. The Chicago Bulls, 98 Bulls, won the title, 31.7. And then the 2000 Utah Jazz. Basically, we're talking like the Hakeem, the Jordan Bulls, the Stockton and Malone Jazz. Like these guys were the most ancient NBA teams ever, and they don't even hold a candle. They look like children compared to this Clippers team. Now that they've added a 40-year-old Chris Paul, a 37-year-old Brooke Lopez, and a 32-year-old Bradley Beal. Look, man, Dan, maybe you and that guy at drop off, are you feeling like you guys could maybe try out for the team? Because me, I feel like at 39 years old, like I feel like I can suit up for the Clippers. Are you going to put in your hat on those tryouts?
I mean, I think I got to get with that dude and get some workouts in to get ready for it. My hamstring is already pulled talking about it. But it's also great. It's like it's that old tweet of like it's the oldest player in the league. What a miracle of modern science. And he's 10 years younger than you. I'm 10 years older than the average age of the Clippers now. So it's like, yeah, this is the most ancient thing ever conceived of. And it's 10 years younger than me. I feel like I just drank out of the wrong grail. Yes, the Clippers at this point, I don't think they need me because they've got a pretty full roster now that they've added Brooke Lopez and John Collins and Bradley Beal and then Chris Paul is sort of like the finishing piece. Although I think they still do have one roster spot available. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if there's, you know, if somebody from the ABA.
It's yours if you want it, Dan.
I mean, maybe there's somebody that's still kicking from the ABA who's still available. I don't know. We can ratchet this thing up, see where we can go. But I think the interesting thing to me is in a league, and we've talked about this, we'll probably talk about it some more moving forward, like, it feels like we're moving younger, right? Like, we just had the conversation about the Oklahoma City Thunder. We had the conversations about the Indiana Pacers, about the age of those rosters, the depth of those rosters, the style of play, all those sorts of things. And Lawrence Frank, the president of basketball operations with the Clippers, was like, listen, we're just trying to get the best players. We need to get the best players possible and who are available to us. And at this point, you know, based on who we could get, we know we didn't think that Brook Lopez was going to be available. We didn't think we were going to be able to get John Collins. We didn't had no idea Bradley Beal was going to, reach the open market on a buyout. We had no idea Chris Paul was going to be available in the third week of free agency, the end of July. And so we're going to get the best players we can that fit with our style. They've put themselves in that position where it's really interesting. This might be the deepest roster in the league right now, but also, as you say, pretty comfortably the oldest. And those two things don't necessarily seem like they go together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, if you're going to be old, you got to be deep, right? It's really helpful to have both of those things, because sure, if the bodies start breaking down, you're going to want to have your third string point guard right now is Chris Paul. Like, you got Bradley Beal, you got James Harden, you got Chris Dunn. Like, those are three guys that can manage your point guard ball handling role. And then you got, oh yeah, we got Kawhi Leonard and Chris Paul on the team.
Oh, right,
so it feels like, Dan, this team is zigging while everyone's zagging. So they're like doing this thing where we had the youngest champion in decades and a half century in the Oklahoma City Thunder. We have the youngest conference finalist. We had a Gen Z conference finalist. And Lawrence Frank, Steve Ballmer were like, yeah, let's do the opposite. You know, let's build a team that all of these washed fans like ourselves are watching and being like, hey, like, I literally went to college with Chris Paul. Like, he's still in the NBA and he's playing at a high. He started 82 games.
That's incredible.
He started 82 games
really
last year, which is absurd. It's absurd that Chris Paul at this age, with the NBA getting younger and more athletic and playing more up and down, he was out here like, yo, man, I might be in Rockports and Hokas right now, but listen, dude, I'm still playing at a high level. If you've ever felt, Dan, the sudden urge to play pickleball instead of tennis, or like when they have those like mints at the restaurant just in the bowl and you're like, oh, I'm not
just
gonna get one.
I do. Yeah,
I'm right. Gonna go get a bunch of these mints. Or Werther's, you're just like, I see the appeal of those caramels. If you're like, hey, let's go out to dinner, let's make sure we go like hit the 5 o'clock, maybe the 5 o'clock works for you. All of these things, Dan, I feel like if you're into those things, you're going to be into these Clippers. Like, if you're going and looking at clipping coupons, you're going to be into these Clippers. Like, that's what I think about. I also think about Jared Dubin's latest piece at Last Night in Basketball, this great Substack. Go check that out. Jared wrote like a huge breakdown on the age trends in the NBA. And that, like, if you look at more recent times, like the most recent modern era, like the last like decade or so, the age curve, like older teams are winning more in the regular season, but the further you go into the postseason, it gets younger and younger than what it was in previous generations. So I feel like this Clippers team is going to be really good in the regular season. I'm confident that they are going to be really good in the regular season, but it's the postseason, the thing that has eluded Chris Paul, my fellow Demon Deacon that didn't win in the NCAA tournament, but has been chasing that championship. I just feel like they're built for like the number one seed or the number two seed in the regular season, but not necessarily winning the title. And maybe, you know, big title, big rings culture is kind of warped our mind on what's important in the sport. And maybe just having a 55 win season from this group of has-beens, over the hill stars, maybe that's the nirvana, right? Maybe that's it. So I don't know. I feel like we need to like recalibrate.
Most of these guys, of course, went and saw Nirvana when they were playing in the early 90s and they were on Sub Pop. I think the interesting thing though, to consider them in that context, like it's not like they're all, as you mentioned, sort of like has-beens or over the hills. Like Brook Lopez played 80 games as a starter on a playoff team last season, right? Averaged like 32 minutes a game. Chris Paul started all 82, played like 2,300 minutes, averaged 28 minutes a game, like was a productive, these were productive players. And I think that's one of the interesting components of the way this Clippers roster is built, is it seems like that's kind of like the bet they're making is if they can ride this depth and like ratchet everybody's workload down for 82.
Yeah.
Yep. Then it might increase the likelihood of that, you know, greater availability in April, May, and June. And like, I don't know if you're going to be able to, you know, beat Father Time that way. If you can run like the sort of end around Father Time by being like, yeah, no, we have all these older guys, but we're using them less. So basically they're younger. It's, you know, like a roster wide version of that, like dude who's using old younger people's blood or whatever, trying to like be like, I'm going to live forever because I'm just, you know, importing other people's blood. I don't know if that's going to work in the NBA context, but like the idea of, we're putting together the best players we can to be able to play as many different styles as we can, big, small, three guard, four guard, whatever. Like there's a lot of ways they can play. I think it's interesting. I don't know that it's going to necessarily, like it is difficult to envision a world in which a roster or a, you know, starting five, top six, top seven, that is so heavily on the other side of 30 can survive the three, four rounds of what the NBA playoffs demands at the pace and pitch and style of what we have seen, as you mentioned, Jared laying out over the last 10 years. And then especially what we saw this past year, that grind, that war of attrition, it's difficult to see, but the combination of players they've gotten here, certainly it's an incredible like accumulation of talent to give yourself mm-hmm. a chance to do it.
Yeah, like think about this. The youngest player in their rotation is John Collins, who I did not go to college with, right? Did not go to college with him.
Also a Deacon though, right? Yeah.
That's right. 27. He's 27. They did trade Norm Powell, who's 32. So they did kind of exchange that and get a little bit younger. But even John Collins being the youngest rotation player, a guy who's been in the league for like 8 seasons, being the youngest guy right. on your roster or like in your rotation, which is like 11 deep at this point. Put it this way, he would be the third oldest player on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Only Kenrich Williams and Alex Caruso were older than John Collins, who is the youngest guy on the Clippers. So it's just such a zig while everyone's zagging. It's such a different roster than where the league seems to be headed. But I'm talking myself into it as we go into it, Dan.
Well, yeah. Part of it too, it's like it seems like it's a bet on the Tyronn Lue and the coaching staff, and also on your like player performance and health staff too. Like as you mentioned, oldest roster in the NBA in terms of the you adjust the roster for age, the minutes played, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the injury absences last year, SpotTrack tracks how many players missed games and you know how many games they missed, how much time they missed, and the Clippers were 18th. In total games missed due to injury last season. Like they were not at the top of the NBA. So even with Kawhi missing half the season, they were still, you know, below the middle of the pack in terms of total average games missed. So like you bring in guys who are older, but you're asking them to do less and maybe not even play every night, right? You know, like with that conversation of Chris Paul went from 82 games as a starter to he's going to come off the bench for sure. Like they've discussed that as the role definition here and maybe not even play every game. Brooke Lopez, same thing, goes from starting for the Bucks to he's going to be defined as the backup five. So minutes per game going to be way down. And depending on matchups and on availability, like might not even see the floor most of some nights. Nick Batum, another one of those sort of long in the tooth vets. But if you have now two bona fide 7-footers that you're going to be able to play, like the small ball lineups become more of like a spice you put in rather than needing him to play larger minutes and on down the line. What happens with Bradley Beal, I think, is going to be kind of fascinating because I think a lot of people just sort of penciled him into the starting spot where Norman Powell went away. And then it was like, well, but is that going to be the best roster distribution? What's their best five? How do you get your best two-way starting lineup out there? Is Beal part of that? Is it better to bring him off the bench? And you have to worry as much about that if he's only making $5 million a year as opposed to 53, all, yada, 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 down the line. There's going to be so much mixing and matching and potentially so much sort of depression of overall workload that even as you have the elevated age of the roster, you might be able to keep everybody fresher. It seems like that's the idea. That's the goal in the gambit. It's an interesting one. It's certainly a way to get as many talented players and versatile players on the roster as possible. And it gives Tyronn Lue a lot of options. It also means that Tyronn Lue is going to have a lot of work ahead of him to keep
Of egos to manage in that roster too.
Yeah, to juggle
it. That's the name of the game. That's the, I mean, if you're an NBA coach, that's your number one thing that you bring to the table.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you ask, you know, if you lined up 100 coaches, 100 of them would say, give me the talent and I'll figure the rest out. So now Tyronn Lue's got that talent and he's going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, lots to figure out with the Clippers. Their starting five could be James Harden, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, Derrick Jones Jr., and Zoo. And then coming off the bench, you could have another starting five of Chris Paul, Bogey, Batum, John Collins, and Brooke Lopez. Like, that's a pretty good starting five coming off the bench. And oh yeah, you got Chris Dunn too. So let's get more into the granularly with the LA Clippers and the AARP LA Clippers, my Rockport Clippers. I feel like if you're going to be at this point in your life thinking I might go to Margaritaville and watch the Clippers, that is something that went through my head. Is that's an option. You know, I hope Margaritaville has NBA League Pass because we're going to be watching the Clippers there. Dan, let's do four little numbers right after the break. All right, Dan, four little numbers on the LA Clippers that just signed Chris Paul, just added Brooke Lopez, and brought in Bradley Beal off the scrap heap. They are going to be right now the oldest team, projected to be the oldest team in NBA history with an average age of 33.2, according to their playing time. Dan, give me your first little number.
First little number is one that you mentioned up top there. It's 11. And that's how many proven NBA rotation players the Clippers now look to have on their roster. Count them off with me. You got Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Ivica Zubac, Derek Jones Jr., Chris Dunn, Nicholas Batum, and Bogdan Bogdanovic all coming back. There's seven. And then you bring in Bradley Beal, John Collins, Brooke Lopez, and Chris Paul. We got 11 guys. Clippers president of basketball operations, Lawrence Frank, has said multiple times, and he's had a couple of press conferences recently announcing the Bradley Beal signing, announcing the Chris Paul signing. They're probably going to play a 9-man rotation, which I'm not a big analytics guy, but that's smaller than 11. So that means a couple of guys are going to be on the outside looking in night in, night out. And so there's the downside risk of that, right, is, as you mentioned, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, potentially a lot of egos, a lot of guys who have made a lot of money and done a lot in the NBA. Does somebody get their nose out of joint about that? But the other thing Frank said that I thought was interesting was, quote, over the course of a year, look, I'd love all our guys to be healthy, all 82, but probably not realistic. We also leaned in hard on James. James played 79 games, fifth most minutes in the league. I hope he can do it again, but we wanted to reinforce that, just like we don't want to over-rely on Zoo, who played 80 games. You know, hope he can do that again, but we wanted to reinforce those positions. Reinforce those positions. Again, we just came off of finals where you had two teams that had a dozen guys average 15 minutes a game. Only one of those guys on both rosters, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, played more than 34 minutes a game. Is it too simple to draw a line from that depth being the deciding characteristic to what the Clippers have done? Or this is kind of just the way it has worked out for them? Do you think this is like the Clippers responding to, in order to get where we need to go, we need to be able to go 10-11 deep?
I think it's more a product, not about the Thunder. I think it's more about just injury prevention. I think it's just get depth, not because we want to keep our minutes low, but because we know that we can't have the same number of games played by Chris Paul, Brooke Lopez, and James Harden as we saw last year. I think you see that in Lawrence Frank's comments. Is like, he can't say it, but it's just like, we got to protect ourselves and get some insurance on injuries. And that, I think, is the insurance on injuries is really what this is about. Is, man, you're looking at Bradley Beal and Kawhi Leonard and Chris Paul, and they might be last year playing a lot of games in some of those cases, but projecting those guys to be healthy all year is a fool's errand. I just don't see it with this group and how old they are and how many deep playoff runs they've had in their careers. It's not just about the minutes played in the regular season. It's also those really tough miles on the treads, right? So I think that this is the right way to go about it, in the sense, if you're trying to win right now, I feel like getting these guys and not adding to payrolls long term, I feel like is a way to kind of moneyball this is that everyone's trying to get faster, younger, and more versatile. What if we just take advantage of a lot of, I wouldn't say undervalued assets, but like, man, Bradley Beal at $6 million, $11 million, and Chris Paul at his number. These are guys who were good contributors, rotation players last year, and they're getting paid way less than what the market would suggest. And so I think Brook Lopez, another one of these guys that, like, as well as he played in those high minute usage rate playing time last year with the Milwaukee Bucks, if you just dial back the slider like a little bit, I can understand why you're like, we're going to get a much better Brook Lopez and Bradley Beal and Chris Paul if we don't have to have them playing 35 minutes a night.
It's an interesting way to think about it. Like, this is, you know, finding value where others are not, because it allows you to kind of do the best of both worlds. You don't have to like worry that a young guy won't be able to pick up what you're doing, because you're indexing on players with tons of experience who played in a lot of different systems, are more likely to be able to pick up something quickly, have, you know, plenty of NBA, you know, background to draw on. And also, you're aligning yourself with that Kawhi Leonard timeline, that Kawhi Leonard and James Harden timeline, which is really only the next 2 years. Kawhi Leonard guaranteed deal 25, 26, 26, 27. Harden now on the new extension, it's this season, and then they got a player option for 26, 27. So like, that, you're not, the no guaranteed money basically beyond 2027, when you could have your sort of next pivot. So it makes sense in from a roster construction perspective. And yeah, maybe in terms of just maximizing the value on the court this year. Our second little number is 11, which again is the same little number as before, but it's a different one. And here's why. Last season, there were 11 power forward slash center types. So guys who kind of move between the four and the five, who attempted at least 4 3-pointers per 36 minutes of floor time and shot at least 37% on those attempts, according to our friends at stathead.com. 11 players who fit that bill. Last year's Clippers employed none of them. And this year's Clippers employ two now. Brook Lopez, 37% from three on five, a little more than five attempts per 36, and John Collins, who shot 39.9% on four attempts per 36 in Utah, which nobody saw. Tyronn Lue is famous for going to small ball, right? He like when in doubt, downshift, spread the floor, five out. He's gone with PJ Tucker for that, Robert Covington, Marcus Morris, Nick Batum. But with the exception of like late model Serge Ibaka, who I had to jog my memory, played for the Clippers for a little bit, and a little bit like a teeny amount of Mo Bamba last year, they really haven't had shooting and size at the front court spots. And now they can play two guys like that with, you know, alongside or behind or instead of Ivica Zubac. I'm wondering, like, what do you think that adding that shooting in the front court does for the Clippers offense?
It's huge, and it's a huge need for them. I mean, you highlighted, you know, of those small ball fives in Tyronn Lue's past. Last season, the Clippers, according to hoopstats.com, at the center position had 0.9 three-point attempts at the center position per game. That's 29th in the NBA. Only the Detroit Pistons with Jalen Duren and Beef Stew had a lower rate of three-point attempts at the center position. And keep in mind, the Thunder were 7th in the NBA with 5 three-point attempts at the center position per game. And the Indiana Pacers with Miles Turner, of course, were 3rd in the NBA in that category with 6.9, basically 7 three-point attempts per game from the center position. Thomas Bryant, Miles Turner, etc. The Clippers needed this. The Clippers needed Brook Lopez and John Collins to be able to space the floor and give them that versatility. So it worked in the regular season, but as we saw with the Thunder and their ability to kind of mix and match the lineups depending on what they need out there, I think the Clippers are better positioned to win in the postseason. The question that comes back to is just the health of Brook Lopez. Even if you have him on the roster, can you depend on him at 37 in the year of the Lord 2025 that this is going to be a team that can depend on Brook Lopez playing at playoff caliber basketball when it comes to the conference semifinals or even deeper as we go into May?
Yeah. And the idea, I think the argument for the Clippers is, if we don't need him to do that for 30 minutes a game, where, you know, ahead of the, where we could say we can kind of aggregate together enough shooting in the front court between X amount of minutes of Lopez, X amount of minutes of Collins, alongside the rim protection and interior game of Ivica Zubac, to get us to where we can have that mix and match and still get the benefits of the spacing for James Harden in the pick and roll, for Kawhi Leonard on the drives, for Bradley Beal coming off handoffs or, you know, whatever, like creating more space for our slashers and our downhill drivers, while without losing the rim protection, without losing the roll threat, you know, whether it's Brook Lopez in the short roll or Collins in the lot, like there's, again, lots of ways to generate better offense for a team that I think for the full season, they were only 15th in offensive efficiency. But a lot of that is like they didn't have Kawhi for half the season and they were pretty darn good once they did have him back in the lineup. So, yeah, just putting a button on it. They were 23rd in the NBA in the share of their shots that came from three last season. So clearly ratcheting that 3-point attempt rate up was a point of emphasis for the Clippers. And they went and got two guys to do that in the front court. Our third little number this week is plus 3.5. That was Chris Dunn's estimated defensive plus minus last season, according to Taylor Snar's metrics at dunksandthrees.com. Defensive estimated plus minus, so just how much you are adding to your team's benefits on the defensive end of the court per possession. Chris Dunn, second in the NBA in defensive estimated plus minus last season, behind only Alex Caruso. Dunn was fourth on the Clippers in starts, fifth on the team in total minutes played during the regular season. They allowed almost five fewer points per 100 possessions with him on the floor than off it, which was the second biggest swing in the league. Second biggest swing on the team behind only Ivica Zubac. Ball pressure, steals, deflections, blocks, harassing ball handlers over the floor. It was a huge part of why the Clippers were the top three defense that they were last season, which was really what carried them as their offense was kind of hit and miss at times. And now you mentioned, you know, Bradley Beal comes in and Chris Paul comes in and Bogdan Bogdanovic comes back. And you wonder, like, is less of Chris Dunn, it would be understandable given the construction of the roster at this point. Is it maybe a good thing, though, in LA? And like, are we worried that as you bring in more of these sort of like veteran offensive tilted players, you lose a little bit of the defensive identity that made the Clippers a 50-win team last season?
Yeah, I mean, he was awesome in the regular season. I think if the sliders or the qualifiers on defensive player of the year and all defense were a little bit different, maybe you get a lot more pub around and buzz around Chris Dunn's defensive season and what he did. But then Tyronn Lue had to pull him from the starting lineup in game 7 against Denver because it's tough in the postseason to not have two-way guys, right? If you have someone who's so tilted to one end of the floor in today's NBA, and this has been true since the dawn of the NBA, but it is more so now, is that you got to have two guys or guys who can play two ends of the floor. And so I like the ability to just throw Chris Dunn at an opponent in the regular season and just pester the heck out of them, like a Tumani Kamara, like an Alex Caruso. I love the appeal of that. And we'll talk about Marcus Smart later in the program. I like the idea in the regular season. It just becomes really interesting to me how Ty Lue, it's a good problem to have a lot of guards that are worth playing and deserve 20 minutes in the postseason. But you saw in that Denver series how hard it was to play with a guy that they just weren't going to guard offensively. And there are just so many times that he was reduced to just the guy standing in the corner or not really being an offensive weapon, how hard it is to play that guy in the postseason. But in the regular season, he's going to be a beast. And I'm looking forward to seeing Chris Dunn and how they're going to manage minutes with Brad Beal, James Harden, Chris Paul, and Bogey trying to figure out those backcourt minutes. But man, Chris Dunn should not be overlooked as a guy who's going to be a mainstay in this rotation.
Yeah, and maybe the answer is as simple as like the defensive floor is going to remain super high as long as Ivica Zubac is the rim protector and sort of the backline anchor. And then you bring in Brook Lopez, who a couple of years ago was like, what, second in defensive player of the year voting? Like, you, if you're going to be able to say, we got 48 minutes of elite rim protection, that probably keeps your floor high enough that you can get away with maybe a little bit less ball pressure at the point of attack if it means a higher ceiling on the offensive end of the floor. And it's also not like Chris Dunn's going away. He'll still be part of the rotation. Just the role might change and adjust a little bit. Our fourth and final little number this week is 6. As of the time we're recording, the Clippers have the 6th best odds of winning the Western Conference. So not even the championship, the West, according to BetMGM. plus 1,200 to win the Western Conference, which puts them behind the defending champion Thunder, the Denver Nuggets, Houston Rockets, Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Los Angeles Lakers. So after all these additions and the offseason movement and the not youth movement, I guess the old movement, does that
the
seem
the wisdom movement? Let's just call it the sage movement, you know?
Yeah, let's go age before beauty. There we go. So does that seem low to you, Tom? Do you think that the Clippers maybe belong closer to the top end of the Western bracket, or this would have them really like on the verge of the play-in tournament, but also it's a pretty crowded West.
Yeah, crowded West. I feel like if we're going to Goldilocks this, I feel like this feels just right. This feels about right. Is, you know, when you look at the Clippers in the regular season, I feel like their ability to win the actual Western Conference in the regular season, I feel like should have much shorter odds than just winning the West in the postseason and being the NBA finalist. I think OKC, they're a tier above everybody else. I mean, I think it's just clear to me that they are above and beyond, head and shoulders above the Western Conference. But after that, the Clippers, there is a range of win totals that I think could get as high as like 58 in the regular season if everyone's healthy and the roles are right and Tyronn Lue is upper echelon head coach and Jeff Van Gundy there too. There's a world in which they compete for the number one overall seed in the Western Conference. I just don't see them winning the West in the postseason. I just don't. The way that this roster is constructed. But right now at BetMGM, they're at 48.5 wins over under for this upcoming regular season. I'm going to take the over on that. So I feel like sixth best in the West, I feel is just right. But if we're talking just regular season, Dan, I'm more bullish about the Clippers.
Yeah, 50 wins with 40 games from Kawhi Leonard last season, and then now you add four like bona fide legit rotation players. I hear what you're saying. I think what they've done, you're right to say, like they've given themselves a chance to move closer to the top of the conference in the regular season, which does help with seeding and matchups in the playoffs. And then you put yourself in position where like if somebody else, for once, it's not you that loses that war of attrition. If another team does, you might be one lucky break, one favorable matchup away from the conference finals. And like for the Clippers, we have to remember, like have gone to one conference finals the whole time, right? Like, I mean, like they have like there was the 1 year where Kawhi got hurt and PG got them to the conference finals. And that's as far as they got. They never went to the conference finals with Chris Paul there. Like, they, like even getting that far would be a pretty gargantuan accomplishment, especially in this West. And, you know, if things break your way and if the benefit of your depth allows you to take advantage of some of those opportunities, you know, who knows how far you can go. So I get where you're coming from. They can't, no one's going to push the Thunder out of off the top of the mountain at this point in the calendar, but they've put themselves in position to thread that needle of maximize the on-court value for now without larding up your books 2 years from now and put yourself in position to remake on the fly if you need to. And if everything breaks right, you know, maybe a new contender in the West has been born out of the wisdom movement.
Yeah. Let's just say that they're going to be 33.2 average age, but it could go to like 35.2 if they trade Zoo for LeBron. Okay. So that would be interesting. Imagine if that, it was like, hey, LeBron, just kind of move on down to Intuit Dome and we'll make this happen. I'm not suggesting that that's going to happen, but I do want to talk Lakers. After the break, we're going to talk about Marcus Smart and him joining the Lakers, which is making all of my Boston Celtics buddies just repulsed and vomiting on themselves. So, Dan, after the break, we'll talk about Marcus Smart and all these buyout ads, including Bradley Beal. Dan, I don't know if you feel the same way. I kind of thought that Marcus Smart was older than 31.
I
was like looking into this and being like, I don't know how much he has left like to give to the Lakers. And he's like 34, right? No, dude, he's 31. He's 31. And so like, I think when he says that he has a lot more to give and that he has more left in the tank, I kind of buy it. I feel like Marcus Smart is one of those like low key guys who are still in their prime.
I think it's just because he's played the entire last decade like he was in Mad Max Fury Road or something like that. It feels like the miles add up when you play the way he does. I have this very distinct memory of, it was when Brad Stevens was still coaching the Celtics and they were playing the Knicks at the Garden and they were like dealing with Porzingis and having a hard time because turns out 7'3" guys are hard to guard. And Smart was just like, I got him. And he just went like, got in his knees and at his hips and was like, Porzingis couldn't move him, or you know, get rid of him and move him around. And they're like, the Celtics came back and won that game. And you're like, all right, that's the guy you throw at every problem, 100 miles an hour, like as hard as he can possibly go. And he solves it. And that's like who he's been. But yeah, over a long enough period of time, it feels like that guy has just been here forever and maybe is like in his early 40s, not 31. So yeah, like it's not outside the realm of possibility that Marcus Smart, after two pretty rough years where he picked up some unfortunate injuries and was on teams that were dealing with many problems, like winds up back in a competitive context in LA alongside Luka Doncic and LeBron James on a team expected to contend and like finds himself rejuvenated. It wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world for a 31-year-old to have a second act in his career.
Yeah, he feels a lot older to me. And that, like you said, when we're talking about a guy who played 34 games last year, dealing with a lot of injuries with Memphis and, of course, with the Washington Wizards, I feel like this is a really good flyer for the Lakers. They needed a point of attack defender, a guy who's versatile enough to like guard 1 through 5. And Marcus Smart, if he's healthy, and that's a big if.
Sure.
I'm excited to see if he's going to go with the yellow like or purple hair. The gold or purple and gold. Like I'm curious to see if he goes there. Harkening back to a Dennis Rodman. I feel like when you're talking about Marcus Smart, he can't be that crash test dummy anymore, right? Like at this age, he's going to be a little bit less inclined to go die on the floor and take those charges, right? But like, he's still smart enough and strong enough to be a really plus defender. According to estimated plus minus, defensive estimated plus minus, he was plus 1.4 every 100 possessions defender, one of the highest marks of any player in the NBA defensively. But of course, it's just coming down to how many minutes can he play like that? And I think what's also interesting here is that I feel like they're just trolling us at this point, the Lakers or Luka, that he was like, yeah, Luka was calling me not just once, but you know, he was hitting that speed dial another time to try to get me to come over to the Lakers. Where's LeBron in this? Where, like, this whole Luka is now driving this bus, continually to hammer this home, is that this is Luka's team and Marcus Smart is here for it. It feels nice to be recruited by, courted by Luka Doncic. I did not see this storyline coming, but here we are in late July. Not only is Marcus Smart being recruited to the Lakers and happy about it, but LeBron is nowhere to be seen in this story.
I mean, I saw LeBron recently. He was, I think, rapping along to Not Like Us Instagram video. So, like, I mean, he's not nowhere. He's just maybe not involved in the recruiting aspect of things in the way that he has been at times in the past. I mean, A, if you're a Lakers fan, this has to make you feel pretty good about the prospects of Luka eventually in the next couple of weeks or so. You know, when he becomes eligible to ink that extension, commit himself to the Lakers for the long term. Like, if he's actively engaged in the recruiting efforts on who he wants to have on the roster, telling you what kind of big man he wants to play with and you go get him, you know, making public, you know, positive public comments about, you know, the new ownership situation, yada, yada. Like, all of these things seem like positive momentum toward, maybe it doesn't come right away because, you know, he's supposed to be going to, I think, with Slovenia for Eurobasket, like, there will be opportunities maybe for him a little bit later to ink the deal. But, like, moving in the direction of, we're all on the same page for the next few years, or most of us, and then LeBron can be there if he wants to be, or he can be someplace else. But if LeBron is there next season, which at this point, given that he opted into his contract and Rich Paul had said he does not, they've not, there's been no, you know, trade requests. There's been no other, you know, communication in that regard where he's trying to get out of town. The Lakers are, you know, at the end of last season, they needed two things in really big ways. They needed more point of attack help defensively, on the perimeter, and they needed a taller guy who could play center because they didn't really have much of that at the end of the season.
Did they ever have Brook Lopez or Alex Caruso? I just kind of forget, like a point of attack guy and
a guy to Zubats. There was a few guys that have come through LA that have been helpful and useful, and then but you know, listen, Talen Horton Tucker. We were all excited about that. Maybe not as excited as the Lakers were, I guess, when they chose him over Alex Caruso, but neither here nor there. Listen, water under the bridge and bygones and whatever.
You get a 31-year-old Marcus Smart, you know? Like that's, you know, it all comes full circle here. I look at this Marcus Smart situation and I'm like, hey, Marcus Smart at $30 million a year, not great. But Marcus Smart at $5 million,
sure.
Now that's a good value add for your team. And this kind of goes along with what is happening across the league is, you know, Bradley Beal and the stigma of being like a no trade clause max guy. It's erased now because now he's got this new deal with the Clippers and he can start fresh and rehabilitating his image. Same way with DeAndre Ayton, same way with Marcus Smart, same thing with, to a lesser extent, Jordan Clarkson, but the Knicks are getting Jordan Clarkson away from whatever was happening in Utah over the last couple of years and bringing him into a winning situation where at age 33, I think he still has a little bit left in the tank. So I want to ask you, along with Damian Lillard, who was waived, bought out by the Milwaukee Bucks and is now with the Blazers, of those five, Marcus Smart, Bradley Beal, DeAndre Ayton, Jordan Clarkson, and Damian Lillard, which new situation of these buyout guys who are veterans that are now with a new team, which one are you most excited about with their new club?
Well, first off, Jordan Clarkson being 2 years older than Marcus Smart, I would never have guessed that in a million years. I just assumed he was younger. I don't know. Maybe it's like the difference between a, you know, sober-minded defensive first guard and a guy who's just shooting every time he gets the ball. Maybe that you think one guy's older than the other guy. I don't know. One's a young man's behavior and the other isn't. To me, I think it's Ayton, right? Like, I mean, we should start like the Dame question, I think, has to go to the side because like he's not playing this year. I would be extraordinarily surprised if he got back in time to play this season after rupturing the Achilles during the playoffs. All things seem to be pointing toward like there's a full year to figure out what Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe and Jrue Holiday, like how everything coalesces there before Dame even gets back into the picture. So like I'm bullish on that just in a overarching, like I think it's probably good for the organization. But in terms of on-court fit, we had a year to hit the snooze button on that. With Ayton, like, he's the only guy on that list that's not 30-plus, right? He's a 27-year-old who doesn't have the significant injury history. Like, hey,
Wait. Birthday wishes are in order for DeAndre Ayton. You said 27.
Right.
This is breaking news. He's 27.
And DeAndre Ayton, happy birthday. What we're giving you is a segment on our show where we talk about how we're bullish on you. I shouldn't say we. I don't know. I don't want to presume. I'm bullish on your fit.
I watched a lot of DeAndre Ayton last year. A lot of it. I have some thoughts on what he can bring to Lakers.
If I remember right, maybe one of like the first guys we talked about doing the big number when we talked about like theoretical stretch fives or fake stretch fives back in
the
preseason.
Didn't work out. Didn't do this little stretchy fives. At the top of the key, I think a lot better than in the corners. But as you were saying about dominating.
Okay, we might have to. All right. I feel less good about it now that we brought up his nickname. But like... clear, glaring need, right? But by the end of the playoffs last year, like J.J. Redick did not trust any of the big men that they had, didn't trust Jackson Hayes, was playing small ball, only five guys. DeAndre Ayton clearly fills a need for a seven-footer who can, you know, run and chew gum at the same time, defend, finish around the basket. He's going for, you know, with all due respect to what the Blazers have been putting on the floor the last couple of seasons, not playing with any real high level playmakers, to playing with Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves, which I think the last time we saw him with like high level guard play, he was actually a really efficient pick and roll finisher, like 1.2 points per possession, 65% field goal percentage his last three seasons in Phoenix, according to Synergy. If you like look at all the pick and roll finishing there. He doesn't look like much of a lob threat, or you don't think of him as a lob threat, but he finished like 73 alley-oops last couple of years in Portland, again, without super high-level consistent guard play. I think that has a really good chance to play up if as long as he's healthy and, you know, if he commits himself to screening and diving. There's like a role that needs filling. He has the tools and the physicality to be able to do it. He's not coming off of a major injury. He's not going into a bench role. Like Beal, I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. Clarkson is going to go into the Knicks bench. Dame is not going to play next year. Smart's role is going to be more defense first, possibly probably lower offensive usage. Like Ayton looks like he's going into a real big role as the starting center of the Los Angeles Lakers. Like that feels to me like the biggest opportunity to succeed of any of these five guys.
Yeah, certainly the highest ceiling, I feel like, is DA playing. And that's if you prefer a nickname for DeAndre Ayton that isn't Dominatin, you can go with DA, because that's how we all called him over the last couple of years. So DA is someone that if he's motivated and he's running up and down the floor and he's setting hard screens, he's an upper echelon starting center in the NBA. It's just how often can you get that? And with a team that was in a rebuild situation where he was the number one guy, the highest paid player on the roster last season, I think you're going to see a different DA in the Lakers where it's a different mindset. It's a different star structure where Luka Doncic and LeBron James are your teammates. JJ Redick is your head coach. Like there's a different a vibe around this Lakers team than you would have when DA is the highest paid player on your team, and different leadership responsibilities with DeAndre Ayton last year versus this upcoming season, and how much he's going to be making, and the burden of being that leader, I think, is going to be lifted on this Lakers team. So the pecking order is much more like where it was when they went to the NBA Finals with Phoenix and Chris Paul and Devin Booker, where he was just asked to be a hard screening rim running rim protector for Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and they went to the NBA Finals with it. There is a version of that DA that can really help the Lakers this upcoming season. And Marcus Smart, with the injury questions and the fact that it feels like he's 35, not 31, I feel like the ceiling on him is a little bit lower than DA. And you're right. Is that mid-range jumper? It's not just the rim running. It's that mid-range jumper that is really good offense in a pinch for a team that I think with LeBron and Luka, you're going to probably want to have a little off-speed pitch in there in terms of scoring, and DA can provide that. I think Bradley Beal, in terms of the median outcome, I'm actually more bullish on Bradley Beal. I think DA can be like a big ceiling, high ceiling player, high risk, high reward, but I do see that Bradley Beal probably has, in terms of the median output, I feel best about Bradley Beal on the Clippers. But we'll see. We'll see what happens here going forward on all of these situations. Very fluid. I could see Jordan Clarkson having a bigger role on the Knicks than as constituted right now because of all those miles on the tires. And offensively, they're going to need that with Mike Brown taking over as head coach, playing up and down, three-point shooting, a guy who's just a more dynamic scorer than Marcus Smart is. I could see Jordan Clarkson just like, oh, wait, did he just drop 30 for the New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden against the New Orleans Pelicans last night? Yeah, I could see that happening with Clarkson. Ultimately, though, long-term, all these situations just feel like these are make good kind of contract years for these guys. Like they want to rehabilitate their reputation around the league, their trade value or their contract value. And I think as a feel good story, Damian Lillard is far and away the best situation here, and that I'm really excited to be watching next year. But DA is such a wild card that I don't know what to expect with the Lakers. I don't, but I agree with you that if things go right with DA and catching lobs from Luka and being the rim protector that they need, they certainly have a larger void there at his position than any of the other candidates we're talking about.
Yeah, the final sort of smallest of all possible numbers, I guess, because it's an hour in the C block, is we'll go with 8.1. That's how many million dollars DeAndre Ayton is making this year and how much he's got a player option for in 26-27. This is the chance, like you're coming out of your age 27 season into your age 28 season. This is your athletic prime. This is the prime earning years for a guy who was just on a max and is now making $8 million. Like, if you like, the opportunity is in front of you. Luka Doncic is about to be the face of the Lakers for the next, you know, handful of years, and he's looking for a guy to run with. This is your, like, this is the tryout. be good enough this year to have them want to pay you to keep doing this with Luka for the next half decade, or to make somebody else come off the top rope with a deal that will dramatically increase that 8.1. And so, I mean, this is the opportunity that's in front of him. It's in front of the Lakers. And now we got to see if they can make the most out of it.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to see a lot of dominating, I think, in Lakerland next year. It's going to be great.
At some point, I'm going to not reflexively laugh, but also wince when I hear that. But today's not the day, Tom. Today's not the day.
That's right. Holly Luca, also a great nickname. So we can see that a little bit more. Thanks to Jason Gallagher for that one. And yeah, this is the point in the offseason that, you know, we're digging deep onto buyout candidates and remaining free agents. If you want to learn more about the best remaining free agents out there and the status of all these restricted free agents and Jonathan Kuminga and Cam Thomas and Josh Giddey, go head over to Yahoo Sports and listen. Actually, read Dan Devine's breakdown over at Yahoo Sports. You can catch it right now. I want to thank, it's summertime, but everyone's dialed in over behind the scenes. Want to thank Stone, Mike, and the entire squad that does all the dirty work behind the scenes to make this show a reality. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Go subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. And leave us a rating, review, and please 5 stars for that. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Big Number. Until then, please go get your Werther's caramels and enjoy the really steamy summer ahead. And please kick up your feet and enjoy some unsweet iced tea like all you old heads out there. I'll be right there with you playing pickleball.